Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're plunging headfirst into something pretty intense, immunologic emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at what happens when your body's defense system, you know, stops protecting you and actually starts attacking. Is more than just allergies.
Exactly. That's our mission today, really getting clarity, because the immune system, it's like security, right? But when it gets inappropriate or maybe too enthusiastic, we call that hypersensitivity.
Hypersensitivity.
And it can escalate fast from just irritation to, well, fatality. So for you listening, the goal is rapid, knowledgeable differentiation, because our sources really stress this.
What's that?
In a severe reaction, an anaphylactic one, you have to be ready to handle acute airway blockage, even cardiovascular collapse, like right away.
It's pretty wild that the system designed to save us can also cause such immediate, massive problems. So let's back up. What's the normal job, the day-to-day, for our immune system?
Well, its main job is protecting your identity, biologically speaking. It intercepts foreign things, bacteria, viruses, before they set up shop. And it uses two main strategies, kind of like military arms. You've got cell-mediated immunity. Think T cells as special forces directly attacking invaders, the antigens.
Got it. Direct attack.
Then there's humoral immunity. That's where B cell lymphocytes make antibodies. These are like custom protein weapons designed for specific targets.
Okay, so T cells attack, B cells make weapons. But the breakdown point, that's hypersensitivity, when it's not just defense, but an overreaction.
Precisely. It's an inappropriate, sometimes huge response to something the body thinks is harmful, even if it isn't. Like, you know, peanut dust or a bee sting.
Right.
So we need to differentiate. The allergen is the trigger substance. The antibody is the weapon the body makes against it.
And for those classic immediate allergic reactions, there's one antibody that's usually the main culprit.
Yeah, that's the IgE antibody. It drives most of those quick onset reactions. But, you know, the important thing is the spectrum of these issues. Yeah, it goes from simple local reactions, maybe a rash, all the way up through anaphylaxis, these delayed or biphasic reactions, and even chronic stuff like collagen vascular diseases where the body attacks itself over time.
Okay, so quite a range. Now, before the reaction happens, the allergen has to get in somehow. Injection, absorption, breathing it in, eating it, standard routes.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw something in the material that really surprised me. Apparently, for up to 2/3 of patients having a reaction, the doctors can't actually figure out how the allergen got in. No determined route.
Yeah, isn't that something? I think it speaks volumes about just how complex this is. Maybe the trigger is super subtle, or the body surveillance is just keyed up.
Or maybe misinformed.
Could be. But it highlights how unpredictable that first alert can be.
Okay, so let's walk through the steps. How does that initial encounter turn into a full-blown crisis? The physiology of anaphylaxis.
Right. So the first time you encounter something, that's the primary response. Macrophages deal with it, maybe record it if it's unfamiliar, no big drama.
But the second time?
Yes. Re-exposure. That's the trigger. If you've developed sensitivity, your basophils and mast cells are now primed. They're loaded with chemicals.
And they recognize the allergen?
They recognize the IgE antibodies that have latched onto the allergen from the first exposure, and then, boom, massive degranulation. They just dump huge amounts of chemical mediators into your system.
And those chemicals, primarily histamine and leukotrienes, they cause the damage. What do they each do?
Think of histamine as causing the immediate visible chaos. It causes widespread vasodilation. Blood vessels relax and expand massively. Blood pressure plummets.
Okay, low pressure.
And crucially, it increases vascular permeability, makes your blood vessels leaky. Fluid rushes out into tissues, that's the swelling, the hives you see. But inside, it means huge fluid loss from your bloodstream.
So leaky pipes and low pressure from histamine. What do leukotrienes add to the mess?
Leukotrienes make a bad situation worse, especially for breathing and the heart. They cause severe smooth muscle contraction. Think intense bronchoconstriction, airways clamping down.
Making it hard to breathe.
Extremely hard. And really critically, they cause coronary vasoconstriction. They tighten the arteries supplying the heart muscle itself.
Oh, wow.
So they basically compound the disaster started by histamine hitting the heart and lungs directly.
And this multi-system failure, that's why we call it severe anaphylaxis. It's not just one thing going wrong.
Exactly. Mild might be local, moderate might spread a bit, but severe anaphylaxis hits multiple body systems at once.
And our sources mentioned this can actually look like three types of shock happening simultaneously. That sounds incredibly bad.
It is the triple threat. Makes it so hard to reverse.
Mm.
First, neurogenic shock from all that vasodilation in the container. vessels, gets too big for the volume of blood.
Right, relative loss.
Second, hypovolemic shock, because those leaky vessels mean fluid is literally leaving the bloodstream. Actual volume loss.
Okay.
And third, cardiogenic shock. Histamine directly depresses the heart, plus leukotrienes constricting coronary arteries. The pump starts to fail.
Volume loss, vessel failure, pump failure, all at once.
Yep. A fast track to catastrophe, if not treated immediately.
Which brings us right to intervention. Time is absolutely critical. The material says focus on the life threat. Don't worry about identifying the allergen right then.
Absolutely. Treat first.
So what are the big red flags? The signs telling us the airway is closing.
You listen. Stridor. That high-pitched noise. Hoarseness. Gasping. The patient might say their throat feels tight, like it's swelling shut. Or they might not be able to speak at all because their vocal cords are swelling up.
Okay, noisy breathing is bad.
Yes. But the truly ominous finding, when the loud, struggling breathing suddenly goes quiet, silence.
Silence means no air movement.
Exactly. Hypoventilation setting in. That's impending respiratory arrest. You have seconds.
So priority number one, if you suspect life-threatening anaphylaxis.
Epinephrine. Immediately. Do not delay giving it. Epi is the direct counter agent. It constricts blood vessels, opens up the airways.
And how is it given?
Intramuscular. High up in the thigh muscle is the best, fastest route.
Okay. Epi first for the airway and vessels. Then tackle the shock, the volume loss, leaky vessels, weak heart. How do we manage circulation carefully?
Well, you look at the skin first, redness, swelling, itching, hives. Those are histamine signs. Then check pulse and blood pressure. Rapid pulse, low pressure means systemic collapse, shock.
So what do you do?
Get 5E access fast, ideally a big one, like an 18-gauge catheter. Start pumping in isotonic fluids like normal saline to replace that lost volume.
But there's a caution there, right, about the heart?
Yes, very important. Because anaphylaxis itself can weaken the heart, you have to be careful not to flood the patient with fluid, especially if they have a history of heart problems. You could push them into heart failure. It's a balancing act.
Okay. And what about milder reactions? Someone has hives, maybe some swelling, but they're breathing okay.
Those patients might get an antihistamine like diphenhydramine to block ongoing histamine effects, but, and this is crucial, they need very close monitoring.
Why? Because it could get worse.
Yes, or they could have a biphasic reaction. Symptoms seem to resolve, then bam, they come roaring back hours later. So they need observation in a medical facility. And anyone whose blood pressure dropped needs to stay lying flat, supine, to help blood return to the heart.
Okay, that makes sense. Right, let's shift gears a bit. We've covered the sudden attack from an external allergen. But the immune system can also turn inward, right?
Absolutely. It can misidentify self as non-self. This brings us to autoimmune and collagen vascular diseases, a different kind of battle.
How are they different from each other?
It's about the target. In a classic autoimmune disorder, the immune system attacks specific host tissues, think type 1 diabetes attacking the pancreas, or Hashimoto's attacking the thyroid.
Okay, specific organs or tissues.
Right. Whereas in collagen vascular diseases, the attack is broader, against the body's own collagen and connective tissue, the stuff that literally holds you together. This can be chronic, debilitating, sometimes fatal.
Can you give an example of one of these systemic internal attacks?
Sure. Systemic lupus erythematosus, usually just called SLE or lupus, it's the classic multisystem autoimmune disease. It doesn't just hit one spot. It can cause inflammation in the skin, joints, kidneys, brain, heart lining, pretty much anywhere.
And patients are usually on heavy-duty meds for this.
Often, yes. Powerful immunosuppressive drugs to try and calm down that internal war.
What about scleroderma? That sounds like it involves hardening.
It does. Scleroderma is a connective tissue disease. The body causes fibrotic changes, essentially scarring and hardening of the skin, blood vessels, muscles, gut, internal organs. A major danger is damage to the heart muscle or severe lung scarring, pulmonary fibrosis.
So when dealing with someone having a flare-up of lupus or scleroderma, the immediate approach is different from anaphylaxis.
Very different. You're not usually reaching for epinephrine. The priority is assessing for any immediate life threats related to organ damage, providing supportive care oxygen, maybe IV fluids carefully, getting them to appropriate care. Establishing 5E access is still important, though.
Okay, now let's tackle the ultimate immune balancing act, transplantation disorders. Here, the body is actually trying to destroy a life-saving foreign organ.
Right. It's a fascinating challenge because the immune system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, recognize and attack foreign tissue. We have to actively suppress it.
And what's the biggest danger for these patients generally? Is it the body rejecting the organ?
You might think so, but actually the biggest threat to survival for most transplant patients is infection. Because they're on those lifelong immunosuppressive drugs to prevent rejection, their defenses are lowered against everyday bacteria, viruses, fungi.
That makes sense. They're vulnerable. The sources mentioned some specific things to watch for depending on the organ. Mm-hmm. What about heart transplants? There's something about atropine.
Ah, yes, that's a key point. During the transplant surgery, the donor heart is disconnected from the recipient's autonomic nerves. The vagus nerve, specifically.
Denervated, right.
Exactly. Atropine works by blocking the vagus nerve to speed up the heart. Since the transplanted heart isn't connected to that nerve anymore, atropine just doesn't work. It has no effect.
So useless in that context. But other drugs work.
Yes, drugs that circulate in the blood and stimulate the heart directly, like sympathomimetics, think epinephrine or similar drugs, they still work fine.
That's a really critical treatment difference to know. What signs might point to infection or rejection in a heart transplant patient?
Things like fever, shortness of breath, maybe low blood pressure, or developing a new heart rhythm abnormality, a dysrhythmia. You have to be vigilant.
And liver transplants. Any specific watchouts there?
With liver transplants, one thing to monitor is potassium levels. Some immunosuppressive drugs can cause hyperkalemia, high potassium. And obviously you'd watch for jaundice, yellowing skin, or eyes as a sign the liver isn't happy.
So for all transplant patients, the general approach involves?
Well, recognizing their unique situation, knowing they're immunosuppressed, being alert for very subtle signs of infection or rejection, and ideally, transporting them to the facility where they received the transplant, if possible, as they have the specialized knowledge.
Right. So whether it's that sudden anaphylactic firestorm, the slow burn of autoimmunity, or the delicate balance of managing a transplant, it really comes back to recognition and swift, appropriate action.
Absolutely. It's all about the immune system, this powerful defense force. When it goes haywire, overreacts, or gets confused, the results can be devastating. For you listening, the key takeaway is differentiating how severe things are, acting decisively when needed, and understanding those subtleties, especially with transplant patients.
Okay, so here's a final thought to maybe mull over. The immune system's whole job is basically pattern recognition, right?
Right.
Telling self from non-self.
Fundamentally, yes.
So if this incredibly complex system can mistake something harmless like peanut dust for a deadly enemy, or even mistake parts of its own body like collagen for something foreign to attack, what does that really tell us about how tricky, how blurred the lines are at a deep biological level between what self actually is and what isn't? Something to think about until our next deep dive.